fine. She was right. Not that he'd admit it to her, especially not in front of Dolph, who seemed far too amused with the whole exchange. So talk. As I was about to tell them, or would have told you if you'd given me a second, remember how the Order is having something of a soiree to celebrate the spring equinox? It's in a week, and it seems their usual entertainment has become suddenly unavailable.
A pity, Dolph said dramatically.
She glanced at Dolph. Isn't it? But they've found themselves in need of someone at rather short notice. I suggested you, of course, she told Hart, pausing for dramatic effect and enjoying the anticipation in the boy's eyes.
And?
She pulled an embossed card from the handbag dangling from her wrist. We've been invited to perform at Khafra Hall. Part 4. The History of Now. Esther could feel Hart's eyes on her in the darkness of the carriage. Outside the window, the rain-drenched city passed by at a slow, steady pace. I'll miss this, she thought with a sudden pang of longing. The city was so different from hers, but it had become home just the same. She loved how it seemed to know it was on the cusp of greatness, as though it were simply waiting for the years to pass and reveal what it would become. Now that she had spent so many weeks walking those cobbled streets, she would always see this city there, beneath her own. At night, especially, she would never again need the help of Ishtar's key to sense this time, this place, sitting just below the present, just beyond her grasp. Because there would be no returning. Once she had her stone, she could come back, but she knew already that once she left, she never would. There would be no reason to. She could look back on newspapers and reports, like the clipping tucked securely in her bodice, but so many of the people she'd come to respect were invisible and unimportant to the men behind desks who wrote history. She could not let that distract her, though. Against her skin, the waxen envelope with the news clipping reminded her that she had other responsibilities and another place to be. Whatever fondness Esther might have felt for this time, for this city, the news clipping reminded her that she had a duty to the future. She had to make sure that the past remained just as it should have been, or else who knew what her future might hold. And the only way to do that was to make sure Hart didn't take the book, to betray him. To betray all of them.
Are you ready?
He asked, his voice soft. Of course, she told him, but she wasn't sure how much of a lie it was. Not that it mattered anymore. Before the night was over, the book and the stone would be hers, and she would be gone.
It'll be fine, he said, his eyes steady. Just like we practiced.
He reached over and ran his fingers over her shoulders, rubbing lightly at the stiff muscles in her neck. For a moment, she felt only the strange, sudden wash of relief, as though all the tension between them, all the distrust and anger drained away with the tension in her muscles, and for a moment she allowed herself to feel real regret for what she was about to do. But no sooner did she let herself relax against the warmth of his fingertips that she also felt the heat of his magic. She jerked away, her heart pounding in her chest. I am such an idiot. Stay out of my head, Hart. He stared at her, his expression unreadable, until she turned away, wondering what he'd managed to see that had put that look on his face, wondering what it meant for her careful plans. They rode the rest of the way in a dangerous silence. She kept her eyes focused out the window, resolutely ignoring him and using the time to gather her thoughts. She could practically feel him watching her, but she refused to turn and give him anything else. There was too much riding on this night, too much he could have discovered with that single touch. The carriage came to a clattering stop.
We're here,
he said, as though she couldn't see that for herself. Hart got out of the carriage first and opened a large black umbrella before handing her down as well. Esther glanced up at the driver, Nibsy, who looked wet and miserable, sitting in the drizzling rain. She gave him a nod that she hoped seemed confident. She wished she could apologize. After all,
In the next 2 hours, she'd betray him as well.
It's time,
Hart said. She straightened her back and strengthened her resolve. Everything that had happened to her, everything she was, came down to this night. She knew that both Dolph and Hart wanted the book. Both would try to take it for themselves. And both would have to lose. In the Viper Pit, Khafra Hall.
It's time,
Hart said, sensing that Jack was already watching them from the covered portico, but Esta only stared at him with an unreadable expression. He would have been more comfortable to see rage in her eyes, but she was looking at him now with an emotion he couldn't place, and that worried him more than fury could have. Maybe it had been a mistake to use his affinity on her one more time, but he had to know what he was in for. She'd been so reserved ever since Dolph had showed up unannounced at his apartment, doing everything by the book, but never once letting him see what she was thinking. He'd hated it, the tiptoeing around each other. There had always been tension between them, a sense that they were both on different sides of the same game. But he felt like the game had been slipping away from him. And now he knew the truth. He wished. He didn't know what he wished. That he hadn't seen the intentions behind those honey-colored eyes of hers? That he hadn't predicted her duplicity so easily? Or maybe, stupid as he was, he wished that he could stop himself from the inevitability of hurting her? But wishes were for children, and he'd grown up a long time ago. Only one of them could win this game, and it had to be him.
"You're going to have to talk to me eventually," he said. "Jack's going to notice if you don't. He'll suspect that something is wrong."
"Don't worry about me." Her expression was devoid of emotion. "I'll do my job. You just make sure to do yours." Hart glanced back at Nibsy. The boy looked like a drowned rat sitting up in the driver's seat, but his eyes were steady and he wore an expression that warned not to cross him. Hart gave him a nod and pulled Esta's arm through his. She was stiff, clearly not wanting him to touch her. She looked afraid. Not like someone who was planning to double-cross him before the night was through. Looks could be deceiving, he thought to himself, ignoring the pang of regret he felt. Let the games begin. Jack was waiting, nervous and jittery, with a glass of what was probably his usual whiskey already in his hand. He downed it and came to greet them.
"Hell of a night, isn't it?"
he said, sweat beating at his temples. Hart extended his hand.
"It was good of you to have us, Jack."
Next to him, Hart felt Esta transform.
"Jack, darling."
She pulled herself away from him and held out both of her hands to greet Jack in her rolling accent.
"I'm so looking forward to meeting your friends."
Jack gave her a leering smile that made Hart clench his hands into fists. "She isn't for me," he reminded himself.
"They're looking forward to meeting you as well,"
Jack told her, his voice carrying a note of something like lechery. Esta only smiled up at him. Hart cleared his throat.
"Did the equipment for our demonstration arrive?"
Jack didn't take his eyes from Esta.
"This afternoon. It's all set up and ready for you."
"Good, good,"
Hart said, clapping Jack on the shoulder and giving him a bit of a shake.
"Should we go in?"
Jack looked suddenly less sure, but he nodded and then led them through a short antechamber, lit by torch-like sconces mounted to the wall. There he gave their names to a man sitting in a caged room that reminded Hart of the ticket booth at the theater. After the man checked over his list and was satisfied, the click of a latch echoed, and the wall directly in front of them began to part, allowing the golden glow of the room beyond to spill into the small space. On the other side of the wall, the building was transformed. Gone were the wood-paneled walls and marble floors of the typical gentleman's club. Instead, walking through the opening in the wall was like stepping into an ancient Egyptian tomb. Gold glinted on the walls, highlighting borders of bright indigo and aquamarine symbols carved into sandstone pillars. Even with the size of the building, Hart hadn't expected anything like this. It was a room meant to inspire, to overwhelm, and Hart hated to admit that it had worked.
"Impressive, isn't it?" Jack said to Esta, who nodded and looked fairly awed herself. She smiled at Jack, a secret smile that had Hart's stomach going sour.
"It's as beautiful as you told me," she murmured.
"This way. We have your demonstration set up in the amphitheater." They followed Jack to another receiving room. With jewel-toned silks capping the high ceiling, the room was reminiscent of Arabia. Palm trees claimed the walls, and a woman in a sparkling veiled dress performed a dance, gyrating her hips and torso as she snaked her way through the room. As they passed, her violet eyes met Hart's. Good, he thought. At least that much was in place and going to plan. The next hour was an interminable parade of the richest men in the city. They each took their turns looking him over as they greeted Esta. As they made their way through the room, Hart was well aware that everyone was watching, expecting him to make a mistake and betray his lack of breeding. He wouldn't give them the satisfaction. Tonight was his and his alone.
"Well, well,"
a familiar voice said from just behind him.
"Hart Darrigan, you have quite the busy social schedule these days, don't you?"
He stopped mid-step, closing his eyes long enough to gather his wits and his patience as he forced his mouth into a smile.
"Sam Watson,"
he began, turning to greet the reporter with his usual smile, but he stopped short when he saw who was on Sam's arm.
"Evelyn."
She was draped in black silk and had a satisfied gleam in her eye.
"Hart,"
she said, her voice smug.
"What a lovely surprise."
The way her mouth curled up told him to be on his guard. She wasn't any more surprised than she was a natural redhead.
"What are you doing here?"
Hart asked. The room felt like it was spinning. Evelyn and Esta, Evelyn here with Sam Watson, at Khafra Hall, on the night when nothing could go wrong. Looking him up and down, she smiled.
"I could ask the same of you."
"I invited her,"
Sam said, wrapping an arm around her bare shoulder.
"I'm covering the celebration tonight for the Sun."
"Are you?"
Hart said.
"First the gala at the Met, and now this. Why, Watson, you've turned into a society columnist."
Fury flashed through the reporter's eyes, but he managed to keep himself controlled.
"I don't know, Darrigan. I have a feeling that, like the museum debacle, I'll get a better story than my editors were expecting tonight. Don't you?"
"I'm sure I wouldn't know,"
Hart said flatly, refusing to react to the clear challenge.
"I'm just the floor show. Speaking of which, we should probably go prepare, if you'd excuse us."
"Of course,"
Sam said pleasantly enough.
"I'm looking forward to seeing what you can pull off tonight."
He gave Hart a smile that was all teeth.
"Until later."
Hart gave him a noncommittal nod and then escorted Esta away toward the doors of the amphitheater. "What is she doing here?" Esta whispered once they were far enough away.
"I don't know. But whatever Evelyn was doing, it was nothing good.
We need to get out of here."
"She's a friend, Esta. She wouldn't do anything."
Esta grabbed his arm, the first time she'd willingly touched him since the carriage ride.
"She knows, Hart."
"What?" He shook his head in confusion. "That day in the theater, when you were showing me the glass casket and she came to find you, I'd bet anything she heard you talking about the lost heir, about our plan with Jack." His mouth felt suddenly dry.
"You can't know that for sure.
And besides, she's one of us. What would she have to gain by helping Jack?"
Esta pressed her lips together, impatience flashing in her eyes.
"I don't know, but why is she here? Why tonight? You had to see that look of satisfaction in her eyes. She should be nervous being in a room filled with the order. We are, and we have a team backing us up."
"No, she's planning something. Who's the man she's with?"
"Sam Watson. He's a reporter for the New York Sun."
"Sam Watson?"
Her face drained of color.
"She and Sam go way back,"
Hart explained, making a show of smiling at the people passing with questioning eyes.
"It's possible he looked her up because I teased him at the museum."
But his instincts were screaming that Esta was right. Evelyn was up to something, and if she did know about the lost heir,
After all the times he'd turned her down, and then after Esta humiliated her that day in his dressing room, she'd have plenty of reasons to hurt them. Especially if she got something out of it herself.
You don't actually believe that, do you?
No, he admitted. But she must be mad to come here tonight.
But the payoff would be enormous, Esta said. She wouldn't be the first Magus to betray her kind in hopes of a better life, she added, her expression unreadable. She seemed lost in thought and very, very far away from him.
Are you okay?
She blinked and, pressing her lips together, gave him a sure nod. We should go. I can fake sick, and we'll keep Jack on the hook and try again some other time. It's too much of a risk with her here, especially if Evelyn knows.
They probably could get away with calling the whole thing off, but the order wasn't the only thing Hart had to worry about. If they didn't go through with this, he didn't doubt that Nibs would take it as a reason to retaliate. Hart might be able to save himself tonight, but that would mean damning his mother. Again.
We've already tossed the dice, he said numbly, and now we're just going to deal with where they've fallen.
But,
come on.
He tucked her arm securely through his and led her into the cavernous space of the theater, all the while feeling like he was walking toward his certain doom.
A Golden Dawn. The auditorium looked like one of the old movie palaces that people in Esta's own time were always trying to preserve. It was designed to look like an outdoor Roman amphitheater, set under a canopy of sapphire blue.
Long-limbed, nude statues graced marble railings and towering columns.
Above, instead of a ceiling, wisps of enchanted clouds plodded in a steady path across a star-studded sky. Jack waved to them from the front of the room, near the stage, his expression anxious.
"Are you ready?"
Hart murmured. "Not even a little." Evelyn knew what they were planning. Esta would stake her life on it, and nothing good could come from that, especially with how she'd treated the other woman. She could still fake sick or create some kind of diversion to get out of there. They didn't have to go through with this. They could leave, regroup, try again when things were safer or more certain. But she knew instinctively it was too late for that. There was the news clipping tucked against her skin. The one with Sam Watson's name in the byline to remind her what was at stake. If she ran now, she might never have another shot at the stone. So she allowed Hart to lead her through the crowd toward where Jack waited near the stage. At least everyone was in a mood for celebration. The members of the Order and their bejeweled wives were floating on the rivers of champagne they'd been drinking during the cocktail hour, and laughter punctuated conversations all around them. It's a good sign, she told herself. It has to be. But she couldn't shake the feeling that she was hours, minutes away from knowing once and for all whether everything she'd done was enough. She would either succeed and be back in her own city by daybreak, or she'd... No, she wouldn't even think about the alternative. Jack seemed to have relaxed a little, though that might have had something to do with the glass of amber liquid in his hand. He led them backstage where they would wait for their cue, and then he left them to take his own place in the audience. From their vantage point, they could see the entire crowd as they took their seats and turned their pale faces to the man on the stage. The men and the women in the audience didn't look like monsters. None of the crews of rough boys who patrolled the Bowery looking for Magus were sitting in those seats. The silk-clad women, the tuxedoed men... She would wager that none had ever gotten their hands dirty in that way. Maybe they didn't know what the effects of the Order were. Maybe they didn't realize the pain and suffering the Order of Ortus Aurea caused for the people in the streets of Lower Manhattan. But the moment the High Princept, one of the highest-ranking members, stepped forward to speak, any charitable thought she might have been entertaining evaporated.
"As above," the High Princept called out, and the audience responded as one with the rest of the phrase.
So below.
We gather tonight to celebrate the equinox, that time of balancing, of new birth. a reminder of our solemn duty to our people, to our way of life.
I think I'm going to be sick, Esta whispered.
Hart shushed her. But his jaw was tight, his hands clenched in fists at his sides, so she had a feeling he felt the same.
We gather together this night, brothers who have dedicated themselves to the principles of reason and the project begun by our forefathers, pillars of the Enlightenment, the High Princept droned on. His tone and cadence made clear that this was a well-worn speech. We stand on the shoulders of giants, and we build on what the founders of this great nation have accomplished. As the great thinker John Locke reminds us, no man's knowledge can go beyond his experience, and so we have made it our duty to immerse ourselves in experience, to push the boundaries of what is known about the great chain of being, unlocking its secrets with our dedication and work.
The audience erupted into applause, and the speaker waited for it to subside, a small smile threatening at the corners of his mouth. The energy in the room was electric, but it wasn't the warmth of magic. Instead, the room was filled with the pulse of excitement that often runs through a mob before they explode into action. The sizzle of electrons, the tang of ozone, and the heady sense of righteousness that can only come from belief in purpose, no matter how insidious that belief may be, no matter the hate that might sustain itself from that darkly beating heart. The Princept went on, buoyed by the crowd.
We have worked tirelessly for more than a century now to increase our knowledge for the good of our land, and this land owes our order a great debt. Since its beginning, the Order of Ortus Aurea has continued the project of enlightenment on these shores. But now we face an ever-growing threat. Hidden among those who would come to our shores with an innocent willingness to become part of our great nation is an undesirable element.
Someone in the crowd shouted out a slur as the rest of the audience rustled. But the High Princept merely smiled benevolently.
Yes, these mages come not with open hearts, willing to throw off the superstitions of their past, but with insidious intent. They hide in the shadows of our society, using their powers to take advantage of the innocent, set on the degradation of our standard of living and the debasement of our citizenry. It is against this element that we have worked tirelessly, for there is no cause more important than the character of our citizenship and the standard of living of our people. So, let us join together to reaffirm our purpose and our dedication to this great land. Let us welcome all those who come to our shores willing to take up the mantle of democracy and reason. But let us always be aware that there are those who pose a threat to our very way of life, for their power, uncontrolled and based not upon study and reason, but from uneducated impulse, is the antithesis of the foundations of democracy. Should their power be allowed to take root in this land, it would leave the once fertile soil of our nation barren and drained of promise. Let us recommit this day to our divine calling and prepare for a new dawn, a golden dawn of reason and science to balance against this danger in our midst.
I'm definitely going to be sick, Esta whispered to Hart as the High Princept finished his speech to a thunderous round of applause from the audience. She'd known. Of course, she'd known what the order stood for, but to have to stand and face it? To pretend that the words weren't about her, about everyone she knew and cared for?
Just focus on what we have to do, Hart told her. Nothing else matters.
He turned to her.
Block all of that out. You can't let them get into your head, especially not right now.
The High Princept raised his arms until the crowded amphitheater went quiet.
In celebration of this night, we have for your enjoyment a demonstration of the power of reason, the very power our hallowed organization champions. May I present Mr. Darrigan, who has pulled himself up from obscurity through the study of the occult sciences, and his assistant, Miss von Filosik, daughter of the late Baron, to whom the study of alchemy owes so much.
It was time. There was nowhere to go but out onto the stage. Hart offered his hand, and she placed her gloved palm in his as she pasted a brilliant smile on her face and allowed him to lead her onward into the glow of the footlights. The card switch. If he hadn't spent so many years learning the delicate art of pretending, Hart might have hesitated. He might have felt weakened by the onslaught of the princeps' speech, by the ragged anger simmering in the room. But he'd lived on the edge of survival for so long that he simply relied on the skills that had become instinct and took the stage with his usual practiced flair. Esta, he could tell, was nervous. He could sense the tension in her posture, and he could see the fear in her eyes. He only hoped the footlights were too bright for the audience to see it as well. He launched into some of his better effects, the Indian needle trick and a daring manipulation of fire to start with. Then he gestured off stage for their final demonstration of the evening, and the stagehands rolled out a large, gleaming vault. Esta looked at Hart, her eyes wide, confused. He knew what she was thinking. They had prepared all week for her to perform the glass casket. They'd prepared for her to be the one who stole the book and the artifacts. But after what he'd learned from Nibsy, he hadn't trusted her not to fall for the boy's innocent act like everyone else. While they'd practiced, he'd made his own plans. A card switch on a much larger scale. At first, he had thought to protect her so she couldn't be implicated when Dolph or Nibs found out what he'd done. But now that he knew what she'd planned, he was glad he'd kept his secrets. He gave her a wink that would look like little more than a playful exchange to the audience, but he knew she would understand. "I'm a step ahead of you." Because he'd worked too long and had come too far to be stopped by something as cliché as a pretty face now. And with the threat of Jack's machine, there was too much at risk. Stepping to the front of the stage, Hart lifted his arm and saluted the audience. Never before had there been so much at stake in a performance. Never before had an audience been so dangerous. But having the odds stacked against him had never stopped him before. And it wouldn't stop him from doing what needed to be done now.
"Gentlemen."
He turned to the princept who'd introduced him and the other high-ranking man at his side.
"If you would come up and inspect this vault, be thorough. Leave no doubt as to its durability."
"Actually," the princept said, "we've arranged a little surprise for you."
He gave a nod to someone off stage, and Sam Watson appeared with a set of chains and cuffs. Evelyn walked beside him, eating up the spotlight as she came closer to them. Hart's throat went tight as Sam gave him a sharp-toothed smile that promised nothing good. But he kept his expression calm, indifferent, even as his mind raced with all the possibilities about how everything was about to go sour.
"We've all heard what you're capable of, Mr. Darrigan, so we hope you'll agree to a little challenge. Instead of using your own chains, I'm sure you wouldn't mind testing your abilities against the locks we provide. These cuffs were brought straight from the halls of justice, and all the locks and chains have been kept under my supervision until this moment to ensure they haven't been tampered with in any way. I trust that won't be a problem."
"Of course not." Hart gave Sam his most charming smile, relieved. Handcuffs and chains were nothing to him. He'd made an art of escaping his whole life. If this was all they could throw at him, he could take it. Esta, however, looked considerably less sure. As they clapped him in the handcuffs and wrapped him in chains, the princept checked over the safe, and when he was satisfied, he confirmed its integrity to the waiting crowd. When they were finished securing him, Hart turned to the audience.
"This safe is 2-inch thick steel with a double bolt mechanism," he told the waiting crowd. "Once inside, a person would have 10 minutes to escape before the air begins to thin. After 20 minutes, they would become lightheaded and lose all sense of reason. At 30 minutes, they would begin to lose consciousness. At 45 minutes, the air would run out." He paused dramatically,
allowing the silence to settle over the audience.
To remain trapped so long would mean certain death. Unless, of course, a person could manipulate the very matter of those bonds and free himself before that happens. Unless a person could command the very air to sustain him. An interested murmuring rustled through the audience. He ignored the unfamiliar weight of the handcuffs.
"Gentlemen," he said, addressing the men who had chained him, "if you would be so kind as to lock me in."
Checkmate. Dolph Saunders stepped from the noise of the Devil's Own into the blessed, blessed silence of the night. He didn't waste time, but made his way swiftly along the empty street, sticking to the shadows. He had one more stop to make before he returned to the Strega to wait for news. The cemetery was bathed in the wan light of the moon. He was only 26, but he felt the aches of a much older man. He was weary, wrung out, tired of the constant games, the constant need to be two steps ahead of the danger dogging at his heels. If all went well tonight, those games would be at an end, one way or another.
"It's finished, Stregina. Tonight it will be done, and you will be avenged," he added softly, though he wasn't sure why, for surely the dead could hear what was in the deepest recesses of his worn and fractured heart. He knelt at the foot of the grave Lena now shared with their child, the one she'd lost because of what he'd done, and prayed for her forgiveness. He prayed that what he was doing, his attempt to get the book and to bring down the Brink and the Order once and for all, would make up for all he had done. But before he was finished, Dolph sensed that someone had entered the cemetery. The intruder waited in the shadows near the gate, allowing Dolph the privacy of his audience with the dead, but Dolph could feel his impatience.
"What is it, Nibsy?"
he said, speaking into the night. He didn't take his eyes from the grave as the boy approached him.
"It can't already be done,"
he asked, knowing that no good news would have come so soon.
"No, it's not. Not yet," Nibsy said.
The shot went off, shattering the night before Dolph even realized the boy was holding a gun, before he could turn and fight.
"But you are."
As Dolph slumped onto Lena's grave, everything fell into place. In that instant, Dolph knew what he should have figured out long before, but had been too willingly blind to see. Of course it had been Nibs. The very person who had guided his every decision after he lost Lena, the one who had known what the Brink took from him, who had suggested that he use Paul Kelly to pressure Hart. Even before all of that, it was Nibs who had assured him that Lena would be safe. How deep had the boy's game gone? How blind had Dolph been in his willingness to trust? He'd wanted an ace in his pocket, and had chosen a serpent instead. But the knowledge had come too late. He felt his heart beat once, twice more, and then the cold night faded as the world around him went dark. A Secret Told. Khafra Hall. The click of the heavy door swinging open echoed through the room. Esta could only watch as the men began to wrestle hard into the massive safe. They'd rehearsed for this moment, and every single time the rehearsal involved her getting into the glass casket, her making her way into the Mysterium, her finding the book and the stone, and then her taking them, sifting through the layers of time and giving them to Professor Lachlan, where they belonged. She'd been so stupid not to be prepared for him doing something like this, but she wouldn't go down without a fight.
"Wait!"
she shouted, drawing the attention of the men to her.
"A kiss for luck?"
The men exchanged glances before shrugging and stepping aside.
"She could have a key,"
Evelyn said.
"You should check her to be sure."
But if Evelyn had thought to expose her, it didn't work. It took only a moment for Esta to open her mouth and demonstrate that she didn't have a key or pick there, and then they let her by.
Hart's expression was stony as she approached him.
"Good luck, darling,"
she said, loud enough for anyone on stage to hear as she slid her arm around his neck and tilted her face toward him. As her lips came closer to his, she saw the question, the challenge in his eyes, and she pulled time still. He gasped as the world went slow around him, his eyes wide with confusion, and then with wonder.
"So this is what you do," he murmured.
"This is your affinity?"
"Shut up and focus," she snapped. "We don't have much time."
"It looks like we have all the time in the world," he said wryly as he nodded to the nearly frozen room around them.
"It's only slowed, not stopped completely. I won't be able to hold it indefinitely."
She shook him a little.
"What the hell are you doing?"
"I could ask the same of you," he said coldly. "But I already know." Her stomach sank at the memory of his touch in the carriage.
"I'm not the one switching the act up."
But the words sounded weak, even to her.
"No?"
he asked.
"You weren't planning to take everything and leave us all holding the bag?"
"You don't understand. You told me the old man, your father, was dead. But that's not true, is it?"
"You were going to take him the book," he said, confirming her worst fears.
"I'd started to trust you. Everyone trusted you."
"Maybe they shouldn't have." Her voice came out so much flatter, so much less confident than she'd intended. Suddenly, she was painfully aware of the way the light slanted, the way the motes of dust hung suspended and unmoving around them in the beams of the footlights, like stars come to earth. She wanted to explain everything, tell him exactly why she needed the book, but he was right. She'd take the book back to Professor Lachlan like she was supposed to, but she couldn't lie to herself about what it meant for the people here.
"Nothing's more important than the job I have to do," she whispered, willing him to understand.
"I sure hope that's true,"
Hart's expression shuddered.
"Because they'll go after Dolph, you know. They'll go after all those friends of yours."
"They'll go after them anyway. I have to take the book. To protect it, to protect them. If I don't do this, they're dead. Dolph, Nibsy, who knows who else?"
His eyes went cold.
"Is that all Nibsy gets out of your duplicity?"
"This doesn't have anything to do with him."
Hart laughed, a derisive huff of air that sounded as cracked and broken as the trust between them.
"This has everything to do with him."
He wasn't making any sense, but she had to make him understand. She had to convince him. "If you take the book now, every magus in this city will be lost."
"They're lost if I don't take the book,"
he said. And he told her about the machine that Jack had built.
"Why didn't you tell me that morning?"
"Probably for the same reason you didn't tell me the truth about the old man you called your father. You've never trusted me."
"And for good reason. Look at what you are doing. You're leaving me at the Order's mercy while you make off with the book."
"You don't get it, do you? Nothing about this is meant to hurt you,"
he said, regret thick in his voice.
"This was all just supposed to be misdirection, to take the suspicion away from you. I was going to come back for you. We were going to get out of the city together, destroy the book together. Before I saw what I saw, before I understood what you're planning."
Her chest tightened. "That's easy for you to say now."
"No, it's not. It's the hardest thing in the world to admit to what you gave up."
He leaned his head toward her until their foreheads touched.
"Unless you've changed your mind? Come with me. Help me destroy the book. It's the only way to ensure the magus are safe from Jack and all those like him."
"I can't,"
she said, hating herself a little for how much she wanted to say yes. "Even if I wanted to, it would never work." He pulled away from her, his expression stony from her rejection. She ignored the hurt in his eyes, the anger in his expression.
"This isn't about me," she whispered to him. "This is so much bigger than the two of us. Your life won't mean anything if you go through with this." If you take the book, maybe you will keep Jack away from it, but you'll also condemn all of our kind to another century of the Order's control. You will condemn magic and all mages with it to a weakened half-life of existence. And it will never recover, she told him. We will never recover. There is no walking away from this.
You can't know that.
I do. I've seen it. I've lived it. I know firsthand what the effect of your choices will do to our kind and to our world if you go through with this. But if you stop this now, maybe we can still fix things. Maybe we can change everything. He looked at her, his stormy eyes testing her for the truth in her words. She knew they were unbelievable, but this was her only chance to finish what she'd started by coming here. You have to believe me. Esta took his face in her hands, feeling the cleanly shaven cheeks and the warmth of his skin beneath her fingers. And you know how to see if I'm telling you the truth. Someday, maybe she would share a kiss that was more than deception and manipulation. Someday maybe she would press her lips against someone else's for no other reason than desire or aching want. Maybe. But today was not that day. She closed the distance between them, and at the very moment she pressed her lips against his, she let go of her hold on time. As the world spun back into motion, she put every piece of herself into the kiss, pulling him toward her, tangling her mouth against his, willing him to take what he would as she opened her mind to him. Because if he got the stone, if he took the book and destroyed it, she would be lost. Everything would be lost. His lips were impassive at first, and her stomach twisted with the understanding that he wouldn't take what she was offering. But then she felt the pulse of his magic, warm and now more familiar than it should have been. She didn't pull back or flinch away this time. Instead, she bade him take all he would, his magic wrapped around her as his lips opened against hers, and she allowed herself to be laid bare, to risk everything for the chance that he wouldn't pursue this course he had set them on. It was only when a smattering of applause came from the audience that she remembered where she was and what they were doing. She stepped back from him, her cheeks hot, but Hart's expression was impassive, unreadable. "It doesn't matter if he believes me," she told herself. "All I have to do is slow time and I can get away."
"Why don't you come stand with me, sweetheart?"
Sam Watson said, taking her by the arm and pulling her away from the safe before she could do anything. He didn't release her arm, but he gave her a wink.
"Best to make sure there's no question that your Mr. Darrigan doesn't have any assistance."
"Of course," she murmured, eyeing his hold on her arm. As long as he was touching her, she couldn't use her affinity, not without bringing him with her. She couldn't do anything about Hart or what he might have planned for the book. All she could do was watch as they locked him into the safe and wait, and hope that what she'd told him had been enough. The Mysterium. Still stunned by what Esta had shown him, Hart moved by instinct, pushing against the back of the vault to loosen the bolts there, adjusting his arms to slip free from the chains, all the while struggling to understand what he'd just seen. What he'd found when he pushed into her mind was too unbelievable, like something out of H.G. Wells. She had to be lying. But he knew he would have been able to see the lie in her intentions, and no matter how he searched, there hadn't been one there. His head swirled with the strange images as he let himself out of the back of the safe, where John Yu was already waiting, obscuring the view of anyone who might be watching. Together they moved to the back of the stage. When Hart saw the coast was clear for him to slip out into the hallway beyond, he gave John Yu a nod to let him know he was good. What he'd seen in Esta's mind changed nothing. It changed everything. As he came around the corner, he almost ran directly into Viola, who was hiding in the shadows. She was now dressed in black, looking every inch the assassin.
"Where's Esta?" "On the stage, where she's supposed to be." "This was not the plan."
He felt the searing energy of her magic a second before his head felt like it was being pressed in a vise. His vision started to blur, and he had the sense that at any moment everything could go black.
"Dolph didn't tell you the whole plan," Hart said, fighting past the urge to scream from the pressure behind his eyes.
Viola raised a single arched brow in his direction, and a spike of pain shot through his chest.
"Dolph trusts me."
"Dolph doesn't trust anyone right now," he gasped. "No one had the entire plan except me and him."
Another bolt of pain rocketed through his chest, nearly making his legs give out.
"It's better this way. They won't be able to accuse her of anything as long as she's standing on the stage with them. If they can't accuse her, they won't be able to trace it back to Dolph," he said,
and the pressure eased a little.
"Besides, she's not alone. John Yu is there, isn't he? He'll make sure she gets out."
She lifted one of her knives to his throat.
"I don't like this."
He met her glare head on, fighting past the remaining pain.
"We can argue about this, or we can finish what we came to do and get out of here."
Viola glared at him a moment longer, and then the pressure in his head eased completely, and he almost collapsed from the relief of it.
"If you're lying to me, you won't make it out of this place alive."
She gave him a jerk of her head, and he followed her silently back through the Egyptian room. They stayed to the edges of the chamber, using the shadows of the great Egyptian gods to conceal themselves until they came to the other side. Gilded double doors carved with elaborate renderings of the Tree of Life marked the entrance to the Mysterium. If Jack had been correct, the passage behind those doors was available only to the inner circle, the highest and most exclusive members of the Order. Jack himself had never seen what lay beyond those doors, and if Hart had any say in it, he never would. Viola dispatched the guard on the other side of the door before he could so much as lift a finger to sound an alarm. Once they were through, they found a wide hall that slanted downward, like a ramp. The floor was made of a polished black granite that reflected the light of the greenish lamps that hung from the walls, which were carved with gilded alchemical symbols. From where they were standing, they couldn't see the end of the hall. It passed downward, into the earth, and then cut to the right around a sharp corner. Hart and Viola moved quickly, following the passage until it ended at a brass cage.
"Come on,"
Hart said, pulling the grated door of the elevator aside. Viola hesitated.
"You want me to get into that? Unless you'd rather wait here."
He climbed into the elevator's cage, and Viola, scowling at him, stepped warily into the small, box-like room. Once she was in, he secured the gate and pressed the lever to make the elevator start its slow descent. The smooth granite turned to concrete and then bedrock as they continued down, rumbling into the depths of the building, into the very heart of the island itself.
"We should be ready for anything,"
he said, but when he glanced over, Viola already had her knives out. When the elevator finally rattled to a stop at the bottom, Hart could hear water running nearby. The air was cool and damp. No one was waiting for them as they exited the elevator, but when they stepped out, they found another set of double doors, this time cast in iron and carved with mirror images of the philosopher's hand. The closer they got to the doors, though, the more he could feel the cold energy that permeated them. Jack hadn't mentioned anything about protection on the Mysterium itself, but now that they were faced with entering it, Hart wasn't sure if they could.
"There's no way through that,"
he told Viola, feeling the sudden, overwhelming reality that every risk he'd taken that night had been for nothing.
"This isn't going to work. I need to get back on stage before..."
But Viola didn't seem bothered. She took a small item from an inner pocket and gestured toward the doors.
"Dolph had a feeling we would find something like this."
"What is that?"
he asked, eyeing the piece of pinkish stone she was holding. There was something carved on its surface, writing he couldn't make out.
"It's what we took from the museum, an amulet in the form of a seal. If Dolph's right, the inscription should break whatever protection this is."
As he motioned her forward, he wondered if it was the same piece Jack had been interested in. She held the object loosely between her index finger and thumb, and then she began rolling it over the door.
"To break false magic," Viola said. You need to use false magic. She drew an intricate design of circles and concentric shapes onto the door, and as she worked, the seal left a glowing imprint of the markings from its surface. The markings began to swell and bleed over until the entire door was alight with energy. All at once, the light broke, and the cold drained away from the space until only the door was left. Hart found himself immediately grateful that he hadn't turned Dolph over to the police as he'd considered after the Metropolitan burglary. Without the seal, they never would have gotten past those doors. He gave a silent jerk of his head, and together he and Viola slipped cautiously into the Mysterium. On the other side of the doors, they found themselves in a cathedral-like chamber with a huge dome. The whole space was lit by the same otherworldly flames as the hallway above. A chemical reaction of some sort, he supposed. They stepped farther into the room, toward a tall, square table in the middle. Its four legs stood atop round silver disks. On the center of it, a low, golden bowl held a crystalline substance that looked neither liquid nor solid, but seemed to glow from within. Next to the bowl lay a necklace with an enormous turquoise gem and a silver cuff he'd seen before, in the images Esta had given to him just minutes ago when she'd kissed him on stage. It was yet another sign that he couldn't simply dismiss what she'd shown him. She couldn't have known what the cuff looked like unless everything she'd shown him was true. Around the circumference of the room, five greenish lamps threw their eerie light up the curved stone walls, and three of the lamps had bodies lying in the pallid beam of their light, suspended in air as though on an invisible table.
"Madonna,"
Viola whispered, crossing herself. "I know these." She walked toward the nearest body, a man with graying hair and a thick beard. He was dressed in a white robe, his hands were crossed over his chest, and on his left finger was a ring with a huge stone so clear it looked almost liquid.
"This is Krzysztof Szeranski. He went missing a few weeks ago."
She walked to the next body, a woman with light hair capped by a golden crown. She, too, was dressed in a white robe, and she, too, was unconscious.
"Frieda Weber."
The final body was on the other side of the room, but even in the dim light, even from that distance, they could make out the vivid copper of Bridget Malone's curling hair. Viola walked over, her hand extended as though she could stop what had already happened.
"No,"
she whispered, glancing back at Hart.
"She disappeared the night of the Haymarket raid."
Bridget wasn't wearing a jewel, as the other two were. The blade of a dagger was plunged into her middle.
"She's still breathing,"
Hart said, even as he knew that such a thing couldn't be, not skewered by the knife as she was,
but not bleeding.
"Should we help them?" Hart wondered out loud. Viola shook her head.
"I don't think there's anything to be done. We need to find the book and get out of here."
She walked over and examined the table.
"I've seen these signs before,"
she said, pointing to the four disks the legs of the table rested on. Hart frowned as he studied them. They were complex geometric designs, a pentagram inside of other shapes, all ringed by concentric circles.
"I haven't. Dolph has a painting, one he took from the museum. This symbol is depicted there."
She glanced up at him, her expression determined.
"This is it."
As he looked around the room for some sign of the book, he noticed that the entire floor of the chamber was a dazzlingly vivid mosaic of the Tree of Life, made from precious stones. The branches sprouted from the central trunk, and at the end of each of the five limbs were five empty indentations in the floor. It was something of a puzzle, he realized. An enormous lock with a five-part key.
"I think we need to unlock it," he told her.
"Unlock what?"
"This image. The Tree of Life is an alchemical recipe. In alchemy, the pictures are symbols of elements or chemical reactions. I think the floor is a larger version of one. If we want to find the book, I think we have to complete the formula."
He looked around the room for some answer, and then he realized.
"The cuff and the necklace. Bring them over here."
He tried to fit the necklace and then the cuff into one of the indentations, but neither fit. So he moved on to the next, and then the next, until he found the one that worked for the necklace.
As the turquoise stone slid into place, its entire branch began to glow as if the gemstones that formed it were lit from within. Then he repeated the process to find the spot for the cuff. When the stone in the cuff clicked into place, he turned to Viola, who had been watching with a wary crease between her brows.
"We need to get those as well,"
he said, meaning the jewels on the bodies at the edge of the room. She frowned but gave him a nod. They approached Krzysztof first, but when Viola reached for the ring, she drew her hand back.
"It feels like death. How are we supposed to get them?"
"As quickly as we can," he told her.
"You still have that seal?"
She nodded and, understanding, traced it over Krzysztof's fingers and the ring.
"Let's give it a try,"
he said, when the entire hand was aglow with the imprints from the seal. His fingers twitched as he readied himself. He could have used Esta right then, with her ability to lift any object in a blink, and for a heartbeat he regretted leaving her behind on that stage. But then he steadied himself and focused on what he needed to do. The moment his finger touched the ring, he felt cold energy prickle along his fingertips, but he pulled it off as quickly as he could. As soon as it slipped free of Krzysztof's fingers, the man's body fell lifeless to the floor. Viola cursed and crossed herself again, but Hart forced himself to keep moving. They were taking too long already.
"I'll work on this one. You do Frida."
He found the location for the ring, and then together they found the indent where the crown fit before they turned to Bridget.
"We'll have to take out the knife," he realized.
His stomach turned with the very thought of it.
"You're better with knives than I am."
Viola only glared at him, so he traced the seal around the place where the knife was protruding for Bridget's stomach, and when he couldn't delay any longer, he grasped its garnet-encrusted hilt and pulled hard. He felt the resistance of flesh and muscle against the knife, heard the suck of her body as it released the metal. Bridget fell, dead weight, to the floor, and blood began to ooze from the wound. Hart turned away before his stomach revolted and focused on the task at hand. There was one space left, and he had to insert the knife vertically so its blade sank into the glittering floor. When the stone in its hilt finally clicked into place, the last branch lit and the entire floor began to shake, and then it began to move. The altar in the center began to rise, floating on the silvery discs. Beneath it, a portion of the floor lifted as well, and as the thick columns of the floor rose, Hart saw that the altar was actually the top of a much larger cabinet, and within the cabinet was a book. They approached slowly, watchful in case the table above them was some kind of trap. The book didn't look like anything special. It was small, no bigger than any of the ledgers Shorty used at the theater to keep track of ticket sales. The cover was crackled and dark with age, and it bore the same geometric design as the silver discs on the floor.
Its pages hung out unevenly, as if the book had been added to over the years.
"That's it?"
Viola asked, her voice laced with disgust.
"All of this mess, all of this waste, and it's an ugly little thing?"
Hart reached his hand out slowly, waiting for some other trap. The moment his fingertips made contact with the cover, the green flames on the walls rose, flashing in a bright explosion of color that both he and Viola backed away from. Smoke filled the air, sickening and sweet and too familiar. Opium.
"We need to go,"
she said, reaching for the book. But Hart had not come so far to lose now. Before she could get the book, he grabbed it. The moment his fingers were around its cover, a hot, searing energy shot up his arm and into his chest, and his head was filled with the sounds of hundreds of voices, thousands of voices. The noise lasted only a few seconds, but to Hart it felt like a never-ending barrage of screams and chants and voices and languages he didn't have words to describe. It felt as if time were standing still as they assaulted him, and then, just as quickly as they came, they were gone. Or, if not gone, they quieted. He could feel them, still, inside of his head, inside of him. They felt hungry. He shook himself, trying to dismiss the last of the noise still whispering at the edges of his mind. He shouldn't have been able to understand the strange languages, but he understood what they were trying to tell him. Touching the book felt like reading a person, all impressions and images, but stronger, clearer. All at once, he understood how wrong he had been about everything, how short-sighted they all had been to misunderstand so thoroughly. All at once, he knew what had to be done.
"What is it?"
Viola asked.